Now, for those of you who have grown like me, seriously old, and I say that about myself, all the while knowing that there are a lot of you out there who are a lot more seriously old than I am, okay? But in my 6+ decades of living in our society and world, we have seen such huge swings towards progress. Those of you who lived in the midst of fighting in World War II know deep down the painful and chilling realities of truly global war in which 60 million people died. And we have to remember not only the 6 million Jews that died under the Nazi Holocaust, but when dealing in today's terms with Russia, we also have to recall that 20 of the 60 million, a full one-third of the deaths, were Russians. Oh, and we dare not forget our legacy of forced incarceration in our country in camps of 120,000 some U.S. citizens who happened to be Japanese, while no German or Italian American camps were created. Yes, time, culture, appropriate ways of dealing with our fears have changed, and that's good. A little later in my life, when television was just becoming a global reality, we had the first television cameras in combat zones in the war in Vietnam. We saw firsthand every night on the evening news with Walter Cronkite the horrible realities of war on both sides. There are two sides, believe it or not. With a tote board that was always listing today's American war casualties and injuries, some of which we had just watched occur, and then a total number always listed for the entire war. At least in 1968, we only had to tune in once every 24 hours to the evening news, not having our cell phones chirp away, you know, 24/7, 365. Ah, those were the days. But in the positive is that tote board showed the growing American casualties. As those numbers grew, it forced an end to the conflict. Unless we forget, in the 1960s, well, we were shooting people in droves, close to us even. We have this morning, incidentally, three people who were at Kent State next door in Ohio, where were four college students were gunned down by the National Guard. Riots in all the major cities burned whole neighborhoods and killed hundreds. In Detroit, martial law was declared and tanks and federal troops occupied the whole city. We had the public executions of President Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, Robert Kennedy. While in Vietnam, there were 655,000 adult males above the age of 15 that were killed that were Vietnamese. 143,000 adult females and 84,000 children killed, along with our 56,000 soldiers. And of our soldiers, there was a significantly higher ratio of blacks than any other racial group. Go figure. As a society, we have been killing black men in huge numbers for a very long time. And we should not expect that group not to remember and to be scared or to try repeatedly to call to our attention that today we simply incarcerate them in staggering numbers if we don't shoot them dead first while arresting them. Have times changed? I have the diary of my great-great-grandfather who discovered who had been elected president of the United States when his newspaper was delivered 3 days after the election. And he comments in the diary how quickly the news had gotten to him from Washington, D.C. Today we are adjusting to a whole world of news that it seems instantaneously available. I was still grappling with the death of Heather Heyer in Charlottesville, Virginia, killed by a white supremacist with his car just a week ago yesterday, when the news came of the terrorist attacks in Barcelona, Spain. And the news about what was happening in Barcelona broke on Twitter, not from our president, but from the men and women hunkering down in cafes, lying injured on the streets in Barcelona. Our president uses Twitter, but he does not control it. There is a democracy and a fairness to how we get informed more than ever before. And we must be active players, participants, in not only receiving the news of our world, but we also need to be active interpreters of it. After the Charlottesville white supremacy action a week ago Saturday, people here in Bloomington wanted to respond proactively. There is a group called Hoosier Action. They contacted me on Monday for a meeting on Tuesday that was entitled How to Fight White Supremacy in Indiana, of all places, hoping for First United to host. It's a grassroots, practical, political organizing event that wants to be rooted in a faith community setting. It was so satisfying to find citywide, fair-minded, progressive folks concerned about racial inclusion in our country returning to the sanctuary in large numbers. This sanctuary, friends, was envisioned and it was built during the civil rights movement of the late 1950s, and it gave rise to the words that we stare at every Sunday and don't pay any attention to, where they were recognizing that no person has a human master, but that we are all, if you will, slaves to God alone. This Hoosier Action group has a monthly meeting of 25 people, and in one day of advertising on Twitter, Facebook, and word of mouth, we had 160 people here on Tuesday evening. I welcomed them here to First United, led them in a prayer that was non-denominational, non-Christian, but fully invoking the presence of all that is holy with us, and us with God. One day's advertising, and we had a tremendous outpouring of concerned citizens because of the communication tools that are available to us. Many of you have, I think, seen it. A short video that I participated in making just before I left on sabbatical back in May. My parts of it were filmed in our church library, and the task was to encourage a national, digitally led conversation on issues of inclusion surrounding lesbian, gay, bi, sexual, transgender issues from a faith perspective using the platform that many of us see many times a day, Facebook. Now, there are many segments to the video, but the first video opens with my interview in words and has been viewed and shared over 2 million times. It may not be my best work, but there was an editor. But I've been so happy to be part with us in making a national global statement of our active belief in inclusion of everyone in that GLBTQ plus spectrum, period, no add-ons. Tweets, videos, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, whatever medium we pay attention to or that grabs our attention or that we pay no attention to at all. Even our chosen ignorance does not preclude us from our daily, moment-by-moment responsibilities to be the ever-so-human face of the way of Jesus of Nazareth. Now, ever so briefly, I want us to ponder deeply, fully, and with spiritual resonance, the words of Jesus that have been tweeted up to us through the centuries. That's what we have. Men and women who found in Jesus of Nazareth the very essence of God, the voice of God, they heard Jesus' comments, they witnessed his life, and they tweeted in the old-fashioned way those stories over and over again until in 2017 they are remembered again in our lives as we seek to become the spiritual agents of God, the spiritual agents of God in our time. That is our job. The first saying is so appropriate for our day, and I quote, "Do you not see that whatever goes into the mouth enters the stomach and goes out into the sewer? But what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and that is what defiles. For out of the heart comes evil intentions, murder, adultery, fornication, theft, false witness, and slander," end quote. Now, I'd pick on Donald Trump about that. But I have been myself so callous at times in my own life that I stand simply as guilty as charged. That doesn't make him any less guilty, saying some things that are absolutely horrible and wrong. It's just that I need this morning to remember my own times of being really wrong as well. The other part of this morning's tweet forward from about the year 30 of the current era is so powerfully energizing for me spiritually. Jesus is confronted by an immigrant woman with a sick child. And Jesus starts out very Trumpish and sees her as a foreigner, one not even fit for conversation. In essence, he's saying, just go back from where you came from. I am not here for you. She will not be deterred. She loves her sick child fiercely, and she says to this rude man, Jesus, that even the Israelites' dogs get to eat the crumbs that fall down from the table. Can you not give my daughter the crumbs of mercy, of your love? And immediately, Jesus proclaims the greatness of her faith. And in that moment, Matthew tells us her daughter is healed, and she will not be, incidentally, the last non-Jew, nor the last non-Israelite to whom Jesus offers blessing. Meanwhile, across the nation, the white right is denigrating the young woman who died from that terrorist car melee. Tweets insulting her are appearing on racist sites as to dismiss her humanity because she was childless, because she was fat, but mostly because she was marching with black people. There still has to be a conversation of length led from the top by a white president, as well as from the bottom of the chain, which is where I'm going to put most of us, but we're not that far down, about what it means to be in transition from a white majority nation to a white minority one. There needs to be a reckoning about how to transform hearts and minds and an honest telling of our history rather than rewriting of history to make it unfair to shift the population balance. There needs to be an opening for cultural change as well. The country was, after all, this country, a destination for Europeans, because here, you could come here and you could change culture from whatever oppression our ancestors left behind. They could come here and build more open acceptance for themselves. And today, in a world where Muslims are swiftly gaining in numbers and Christians are aging out and diminishing, that morphing needs to happen in the culture if we are to become more comfortable and open to Muslims. Theologically, there needs to be an understanding that all creation, including all the people, all their faiths and cultures are God's. And that, like shifting tides, the changing weather, the reshaping coastlines, nations too must accept the ebb and flow of time. As in the Bible, Israel has to come to grips with that. Sometimes with tears, and sometimes with joy, but always with the understanding that God never abandons anyone. Christ did not ordain us to be white, pink, black, brown, or even to be Christian. He ordains us to be God's, to accept our death and our defeats as well as our life and its sweetness. It will be a long while before Charlottesville again finds sweetness in its living. A long while before the ravages of white supremacist pride and anger are washed from the blood-stained streets there or in Barcelona or in Ferguson or in Auschwitz. A long while before we can right the political shipwreck that we worry about every day. But it will not be long. It will not be long before each of us steps out of this place to boldly live and bravely proclaim that all are equally in God's hands and all are to be loved as children of God. All. Thank God for that. Thank God that as our scriptures testify, God is love and God is changed. God is changed in loving relationship. Jesus sent his disciples to the house of Israel, where he said he was called to gather lost sheep. And then a pushy, dark-skinned Canaanite woman unveils something more, something that leads us to never shut the door, never to shut the door to those outside us. Just when we thought we'd seen the limits of God's love, it grows. Which is why we are called yet again today to be the allies with others that we would want if we needed a friend or ally, if we just put it selfishly that way. Yesterday in Boston, tens of thousands came out to be allies with those most at risk in society. They marched peacefully, they spoke truthfully, and with great assertiveness. So let us prepare to march out of here and allow our love to trump any hate we encounter.